This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 8th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 159. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. The Big Deal feature. The Cullen Commission. Bombshells and finger-pointing at British Columbia's public inquiry into money laundering. Hear how casinos became a cesspool of crime. And I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me?
I'm Joe Biden.
I'm Donald J. Trump.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing.
And God bless the United States.
Is it just me, or just because Donald Trump is on his way out of the White House, that doesn't mean he'll disappear? Same goes for his legions of followers. So many scandals and the mismanagement of the coronavirus pandemic, yet the runner-up to Joe Biden still managed to score 70 million votes. Trump will remain a force to be reckoned with. He could always try to run again in 2024. If not him, maybe Mike Pence or Don Jr. Trump has a sizable database, donors, and the MAGA hat-wearing fans. You bet they'll pay to see him live at an arena or stadium, buy more MAGA hats and shirts, books, maybe spend money on a streaming service. Clearly, more than half of American voters can't stand him, but he has the confidence of almost half. So what does that say about the corporate media, polling companies, and voters themselves? Trump's legacy will be rated and debated for decades. Just as Hillary Clinton supporters made Trump's life difficult since 2016, Joe Biden will have a bumpy ride for the next 4 years. The Trumpers will be there to criticize every move his administration makes. Joe Biden, the most Irish president since JFK, will need the luck of the Irish. Meanwhile, Trump is not finished. He has more than 2 months left in office. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, walnuts, beef jerky on the cheap at China's premier expo sparks talk of poor event management. The China International Import Expo, started by Xi Jinping in 2018 to boost foreign trade, drew exhibitors from 181 countries. More than 3,800 companies made deals worth $71 billion, but complaints at the 2020 edition. Infiltrators taking advantage of the Shanghai event to hold clearance sales. At the New Zealand and Taiwanese food sections, beef jerky, dried walnuts, and caterpillar fungus were going for cheap in individual packets. Kyoto and the Japan Times. E-money laundering in Japan nearly tripled in 2019, police say. Almost 4,000 cases of suspected money laundering, many of which were linked to e-money transfer providers, were reported to police in 2019. The 3,900 cases reported by non-bank operators of funds transfer services compares to almost 1,400 in 2018. The agency blames the rapid expansion of e-money payment services that allow people to make transfers easily and with small service fees. ABC News Australia. What's going wrong with our trade with China? Why are our exports being suspended? It's been a rough 6 months for Australian exporters selling farm produce into China. Chinese authorities have launched an investigation into claims Australia has dumped wine, and according to the Australian cotton industry, told spinning mills to stop buying Australian-grown cotton. Things really went up a notch this week when $2 million worth of Australian rock lobsters were left on the tarmac at a Shanghai airport. Trade Minister Simon Birmingham still can't get his Chinese counterpart on the phone. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Oregon decriminalizes possession of street drugs, becoming first in nation. Measure 110 won 59% to 41%, a margin of victory exceeding 350,000 votes. The George Soros-backed Drug Policy Alliance spent $4 million in the campaign. Mark Zuckerberg and the American Civil Liberties Union also spent six figures. Former Governor John Kitzhaber argued that the measure would undermine the role of courts in getting people into drug treatment and would not guarantee much-needed treatment beds. In the Olympian, Olympia City Councilmember homes vandalized over the weekend. Clark Gilman and Jessica Bateman spent last weekend cleaning after both their homes were targeted by vandals with white paint. They weren't sure whether the vandalism was a political statement or something associated with Halloween. However, Bateman said her property has been vandalized before. Olympia Mayor Cheryl Selby's home was vandalized over the summer by protesters. In the Haida Gwaii Observer, BC Ferries snubs North Coast veterans, seniors, and active duty military. BC Ferries will offer free travel on Remembrance Day to active, reserve, and retired military personnel and cadets, that is, unless you live on the North Coast. Free fare passenger fares to those presenting official Canadian military identification or traveling in uniform are not applicable on the Inside Passage, Haida Gwaii, and Central Coast Connector routes. Headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Security company at Paul King Jin's gym quietly closes. Wilkinson, no apologies for BC Liberal loss, downplays Zoom roast scandal during caucus meeting on Zoom. Pro-Beijing group based in Richmond targets reporter after link exposed to illegal Toronto casino. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to the Breaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Cullen Commission. Bombshells and finger-pointing at British Columbia's public inquiry into money laundering. Hear how casinos became a cesspool of crime. The much-anticipated witness testimony phase began October 26th after a two-week delay due to the BC election. Commissioner Austin Cullen's job is to get to the bottom of the billions of dollars that crooks moved through BC casinos, real estate, financial institutions, and luxury cars over the last couple of decades. Cullen has heard via webcast from current and former police officers, casino investigators, BC Lottery Corporation managers, and even a casino worker. The testimony has brought to life what was previously reported by journalists Sean Holman, Eric Rankin, Kathy Tomlinson, Sam Cooper, John Woodward, and yours truly. It paints a picture of a government asleep at the wheel, with its eyes wide shut. On October 27th, Cullen heard from Stone Lee, a BC Lottery Corporation investigator who formerly managed surveillance for Great Canadian Gaming Corporation. Commission lawyer Kyle McCleary questioned Lee.
And was it your understanding that this individual's perspective was that loan sharks were good for business at the casino?
It was brought to my attention, a comment was made to one of my staff that the managers actually said, if my customer need $50,000 at 2 a.m. in the morning, where do you think they're going to get it if you guys keep on kicking out these people?
Ward Clapham was the chief of the Richmond RCMP detachment when Great Canadian's flagship, River Rock Casino Resort, opened in 2004.
Well, by 2005, I don't think anyone could have predicted what we started to see was, because it was a degree of unknown, but the kidnappings, we saw a couple kidnappings, and we were getting lots of intelligence reports and briefings regarding money laundering, robberies, loan sharking. Now, these, generally speaking, are not reported to the police. The bad guys, bad girls, they're not going to report to us, and generally speaking the victims. So a lot of this was intelligence that we were picking up and or when we were called in to get involved in the 2005, the two kidnappings, for example, or just the other large issues that we were starting to see come from the River Rock.
Muriel Labine was a dealer supervisor for Great Canadian's Richmond Casino before River Rock. She testified November 3rd that she unsuccessfully led a campaign in the 1990s to unionize the casino workers. Labine described the culture of fear as management turned a blind eye to criminals. Labine was questioned by McCleary and later Jitesh Mistry, the lawyer for the BC Government and Service Employees Union.
And when the $500 a hand limit came in, did you immediately notice that players started to play at that level?
There was a lot of players playing at that level at that time. And then we started seeing a group of young Asian men started coming into the casino.
And these individuals are the ones you refer to in your affidavit as the boys. Is that right?
Yeah, we called them the boys because a lot of them were quite young, I would say between 19 and 25. But they also had older men that we soon discovered were their bosses.
And did these individuals, the boys as you call them, were they gamblers? Did they play the games?
They played the games, but they weren't, for the most part, were not heavy bettors. Occasionally they were. They used to come to the table with bundles of $20 bills, $1,000 and $2,000 bundles, all wrapped in elastic band, and they would cash in. And a lot of the time, they didn't play.
And did you see what they did with the chips they obtained with that money?
They would loan the money out. They were loaning money to the other players. There was no secret about it. They were right on, under the cameras. They did it.
You mentioned your concerns about this activity in your workplace. Did you report these concerns to management at the casino?
Oh, absolutely. We reported repeatedly to a lot of different people.
And can you describe the reaction you received to these reports?
We were told over and over again, and I'm not the only one that was told, this was a story coming from management. They are just friends loaning money to friends. How do we know they're not friends loaning money to friends? And this was repeated over and over again.
Did you have a response to that question of how did you know this wasn't just friends loaning money to friends?
The first time you hear it, you think, okay, I'm not seeing this right. And you go back out on the floor and you look again, and then you know what you're seeing. And you go back and you challenge it and you say, no, this is different. This is, they're money laundering. They're loan sharking. And you still got the same answer. You got the same answer, no matter how many times you report it.
There's a really interesting story that's in the affidavit, and it involves a person that I imagine on the shop floor, you refer to as Scarface and smoking. Can you maybe just recount that for us?
We had one of the gang leaders, and this is, we believe, to be one of the main bosses, was in the casino, and his name was Scarface. We gave all the boys, as many as we could, we gave them nicknames so that we could identify them, particularly in the Zert Journal. Scarface had a big, about 4-inch scar down the side of his face. And this one, no, it was not good having him at the table. He was a problem. And he's sitting at the table, and he's at a no-smoking table. And I turn my head to look, and he's blowing smoke into the dealer's face. Every time he loses a hand, he's blowing smoke, and it's a no-smoking table. So I go over to the no-smoking table, and I'm very nice. I'm trying to be nice. I don't want to aggravate this man. And said, made hand signals pointing to the sign, you can't smoke here. I walk away hoping that he's going to do what I've asked. And I turn my head again. He's blowing smoke at the dealer. I come back and I'm a little more insistent this time. You can't smoke here. And he swears at me, and he gives me a rude hand gesture and flicks his cigarette ashes onto the carpet. And so I called my floor manager to the floor out. My floor manager was on the floor in 1 minute after I called him. He came out very quickly. He stood there and he said, what player, who is it? And I'm thinking he's going to toss this guy right out the door. And instead he sees Scarface, and he goes and he walks over to the table, picks the no smoking sign off the table, moves it to another table, takes the ashtray off the table, off that table, and brings it back and gives an ashtray to Scarface. Then he pulls me aside and he tells me, I don't want you talking to this man. This guy is dangerous. Leave him alone. And he's dangerous. Stay away from him. And so at that point, I'm wondering who's running the place. Are the gangs running it, or is the casino running it? And any other time in any other situation before the boys had come in, that man would have been asked to leave. He would have been told to leave.
On November 4th, BC Lottery Corporation anti-money laundering manager Daryl Tottenham, under questioning from commission lawyer Allison Latimer, Tottenham also described how casino profits came before public safety.
The service providers didn't want you to approach VIP patrons because they might lose that customer, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And that would interfere with their ability to generate revenue, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And BCLC was responsive to that return, or that to that concern, because it asked you not to approach VIP patrons, correct?
That's correct, yes.
So BCLC was responsive to the service provider's concerns about losing revenue, and that constrained the actions that investigators were permitted to take, correct?
That's correct, yes. Okay.
Latimer asked Tottenham about Paul King Jin, a Richmond man accused of money laundering and loan sharking.
When and how did you become aware of Paul Jin?
In the first year that I started working at BCLC as an investigator at Starlight, I observed files where his name came up. I observed that he was actually a player at one point. He had some play, it wasn't a lot, but I saw him on a couple of files. I saw him on other files and other, because we obviously we can see any activity from other casinos as well. So we were seeing cash transactions and files that included him as part of the file. And a couple of them in suspicious circumstances. So that was one of the first times I actually ran into his name and saw his name.
You understood in or around 2012 or 2013 that Kwok Chung Tam was also potentially at the center of a cash facilitation network, correct?
Yeah, it was my belief at the time. And that was, again, based on my observations and common denominators of files similar to what we did with Jin.
And you eventually realized, in part from discussions with the RCMP, that he was likely Paul Jin's boss, correct?
Yes, that was probably the clincher. We had enough connections with Paul Jin's group that I started to see some ties that tied him back to Paul Jin. But absolutely, we confirmed that with a corporal in the RCMP who was aware of the hierarchy. And inform me of that.
I have encountered Rich Coleman in the past. Our interaction was at a BC Liberal fundraiser back in, I think it was 2010. And we didn't say anything to each other, but I extended my hand to shake it, and he's a big fella. He tried to crush my hand. First and only time that's ever happened to me in my life. Anyway, I took that to be a message to me.
That's the voice of Fred Pinnock, who claimed BC's minister responsible for gambling, Rich Coleman, tried to crush his hand. Ex-RCMP officer Fred Pinnock was the commander of the Integrated Illegal Gaming Enforcement Team. Coleman shut it down in 2009. Pinnock delivered the first political bombshells when he testified on November 5th, under questioning from commission lawyer Patrick McGowan. Pinnock became a whistleblower after the 2009 shutdown of his squad, after he had warned government that organized crime was infiltrating BC casinos. Pinnock's partner is Naomi Yamamoto, who was a BC Liberal cabinet minister.
Subsequent to your time as the officer in charge of IGET, did you attempt to or did you communicate these concerns to anyone in government?
Yes, I asked Naomi Yamamoto, who I was then dating in 2009. She was a new MLA after the 2009 election. I believe the election was in May. Shortly thereafter, I asked her to go and speak with the cabinet minister responsible for gaming, Rich Coleman, to arrange a meeting between me and him to alert him to what I believe to have been out of control organized criminal activity in casinos. She did this. She told me she did this. And she told me that it was in a group setting. And she described his reaction as brutal and dismissive and embarrassing to her. My conclusion from that is that he did not want to be seen to be told.
Did she report to you the words that she says were spoken by Minister Coleman?
No, at no time has she ever in our time together disclose one word ever said in a cabinet or caucus setting. She did characterize that interaction, though, in that fashion.
Did she tell you who else was present?
No, caucus colleagues, nobody specific.
Did she tell you the nature of the meeting, if it was a meeting that was taking place when she says she raised this issue?
She said nothing more about it.
Did you ever have a meeting with Minister Coleman about this issue?
Never have, no.
Did you ever have any communication with Minister Coleman about this issue?
None.
Did you have communication with anybody else in government in or around that time about this issue?
I did. In the fall of 2009, several months after Naomi Yamamoto went to Mr. Coleman, I was approached by a reporter. I gave an interview, and then Solicitor General, or Mr. Public Safety and Solicitor General Kashid, was scrummed by the media on television, and I watched his reaction of displeasure to my comments that had been provided to the reporter. I've known Kashid for over 35 years. We met a couple of weeks later to discuss it.
In 2009?
And he said to me, in effect, that is what's going on, Fred, but I can't say that publicly. You know, it's all about the money. And I did not audio record that conversation. He did refer to Mr. Coleman as being largely responsible for this, along with senior Mounties who were complicit.
What did he tell you, as best you can recall?
He named three or four officers, including Dick Bent, who I had that reporting relationship with. And that was the extent of his reference to senior police involvement.
But in what context was he raising these names as it relates to organized crime in casinos?
The context was, it was a game being played by senior police officers who were, I think the term he used, were puppets for Coleman.
Did he say what action or inaction on the part of these officers made it a game?
He did not.
Who are the other officers he named?
I believe he named Al McIntyre. I believe he named Gary Bass, Dick Bent, and I can't remember if there was a fourth.
These are officers that were known to you?
Yes.
The world first heard about Fred Pinnock back in 2009 when Sean Holman of Public Eye Online broke stories about the shutdown of the squad. Holman asked Coleman in 2009 for his reaction.
I totally disagree with him, actually. And we have, in every casino in BC, we have the highest of security, both visual and people on site. If you ever go into a casino, you'll find that we spend millions of dollars on all kinds of cameras and monitoring and stuff like that. We have people on site working 24/7. We also have a very, very sophisticated team of people that do the investigations on gaming in BC that actually integrate with police. So I just disagree with what his assessment is. The one team that he was on was never actually fully staffed, never seemed to come together. I had concerns about its success, so that's why I brought it back in.
The Cullen Commission continues hearings until April. Watch them at cullencommission.ca.
Nanaimo Bar. brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the British Columbia men and women who have served and protected Canada and Canadians from World War I to peacekeeping missions of today, to those who made the ultimate sacrifice, to those who came home with wounds. Because of the pandemic, Canadians will not be gathering in big crowds on November 11th this year, but you are in our hearts and you are in our minds. We cannot thank you enough. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. When your face is gone, you won't stand alone. We'll all stand together, cause this is our home. And it don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 8th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 8th in 1966, U.S. President Johnson gave the National Football League an antitrust pass, allowing it to merge with the American Football League? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. PATREON.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.